Okay, good morning everyone. Parshas Emor, page 672. Just before we start, I want to dedicate today's shir to Sarah bat Rebbe Lazar HaKoyen. That's Janice's mother-in-law. So your tzad is today. Shama should have an aliyah and only brachas of the whole mishpacha. I wanted to start with an overview of the parsha. The parsha starts with five concepts before it gets into the festivals. So we have the laws of the Kohanim, which are prohibited to become impure. And the Torah talks about other restrictions on Kohanim, like who they can marry and so on. Then we have a parsha which talks about the blemishes. That if a Kohen has a blemish, then they won't be able to... If a Kohen has a blemish, they cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash, they cannot serve in the Mishkan and so on. Thirdly, we have the laws of Tumah. So if a Kohen is impure, then the Kohen is barred from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. He cannot offer up sacrifices and participate in bringing up the various rituals and so on and so forth. Similarly, still on the concept of blemishes, the next one is that the animals with blemishes cannot be brought as sacrifices, not brought as karbonis. And then it goes into a few laws to do with general karbonis, including karbon toidah, which is the Thanksgiving korban. So that's the first part of the parasha. Then the parasha goes into a whole famous section dealing with the festivals, the Yom Tovim. In that parasha, it also reveals some other mitzvahs, one of them being Chodosh. Chodosh is the concept of not eating once the year starts, not to eat new produce until the second day Pesach. By the way, that's relevant today. It's a very, very big... I suppose the best way to put it is a very big halachic controversy, whether it applies today or particularly whether it applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. Many opinions are actually of the opinion that it does apply outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there are those individuals who actually are quite makbid, are quite sick with it, and want, which becomes very problematic because you don't know. I mean, it doesn't apply to this part of the year. It applies to after Rosh Hashanah until Pesach, right? So you don't know if you're buying bread. Where that flour is from, if it's from the produce of this year or last year, right? So it's called Yoshan and Chodosh, you have to know that. Anyway, but however, it's very widely accepted not to keep Chodosh, especially outside of Eretz Yisrael. But I'm just saying, it's not so simple, because actually, although the minhag has become very widespread not to keep Chodosh, it's actually not so consistent with a lot of halachic literature, which is an interesting discussion on its own. The Torah also talks about the mitzvahs of Peah, which is the various things that pay a leket and so on, the things that we have to leave in the field for the poor people, like if you harvest a field in Eretz Yisrael, you have to leave the corner, if you forget stuff there and so on. We have the mitzvah of Sfiras Soimer, which we're going to go into.
Those mitzvah kept now?
Yeah, that's only in Eretz Yisrael, that's an agricultural mitzvah. Most agricultural mitzvahs are only in Eretz Yisrael. Some apply outside of Eretz Yisrael rabbinically, but most agricultural mitzvahs have to do with fields and Trumah and Meiser. Oral actually does apply in Chutz La'aretz. It's interesting you asked that. So there is a thing called Orla, which we had last week's parasha, which is not to eat the fruit of the tree the first 3 years. It applies rabbinically outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. However, you don't have to worry about it when you go to a store, because the reason is, in Eretz Yisrael you do, right? In Eretz Yisrael you have to have, well, for lots of reasons, in Eretz Yisrael you have to have a hechsher on a fruit shop. Or a mere vegetable shop, because it has to be Truma and Meiser and Schmidt and all these things. One of them being Orla, you have to make sure it's not from the first 3 years, if it's fruit. In Chutz La'aretz, although the prohibition does apply, you don't have to worry about it, because the halacha is that in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael, Sofek Orla is Mutter, which means when a fruit is in doubt, you're not sure if it's Orla or not, so it's okay. Any fruit store you walk into, you don't know. The probability is it's not from the first 3 years, because most fruit's not from the first 3 years, but you don't know, so therefore you don't know it's okay. But if you planted a tree in your back garden, for example, and you did see fruit the first 3 years, you wouldn't be allowed to eat it, even in Chutz La'aretz. But most agricultural mitzvahs are only in Eretz Yisrael. We have the mitzvah of Sfiras when it talks about the Yom Tov, we have the mitzvah of Sfiras Omer, which we'll talk about soon, counting the Omer. Then we have, towards the end of the parasha, you've got the mitzvah of bringing olive oil for the Mishkan. We have the mitzvah of Lechem Haponim, which is the 12 showbreads that was placed on the table in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash from Shabbos to Shabbos. And at the very end of the parasha, we got the unfortunate story of the Mekalel. The Mekalel is the guy who came out and he blasphemed. and it was capital punishment offense, and he was caught and he was put to death actually. So that's a story that was the end of the at the end of the parasha, which Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask Hashem what to do with him, and Hashem ordered he should be executed. One of the most severe avarice is blaspheming and so on. So that's the end story of the parasha. Now, I want to actually go into, particularly I want to go into the mitzvah of Sfira Soimer, but before I do that, I'm just going to share with you a thought from the Ishbitzer. Because if you look at your handout, you see the first five sections before we get to the Yom Tovim. So he makes a very interesting, innovative thought. He says the following. He says the first five sections of the parasha before we get to the section of the festivals actually represents five struggles, five difficulties that people experience. The first one, he says, is just a general concept of death. And that's the idea of Kohanim not becoming impure to their body and so on. So that's the challenge of life and death. The second, he says, is the concept of the Kohen not being able to serve if the Kohen is blemished. So that's the challenge of health, the challenge that people experience health, which prevents them not only from functioning properly, but prevents them often from serving Hashem properly. Right? In fact, the Gemara talks about that. The Gemara talks about that when a person has health issues that prevents him from learning Torah or keeping mitzvahs properly, that's a real strong argument to daven to Hashem to take it away. But it's one of the struggles that we have. Like, why would Hashem do that kind of thing if it's actually undermining the very purpose of why I'm created and so on and so forth. Right? So that's the second struggle. So the third struggle is a spiritual struggle, where sometimes it's talking about the Kohen who became impure and therefore cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. That represents a spiritual struggle, when sometimes we're just not inspired, we're impure, we're contaminated, so to speak, spiritually, and it kind of prevents us from advancing spiritually, and that's a struggle that we have to go through. The fourth is the struggle of giving meaning and purpose to the physical things that we have. So the fourth thing in the parasha is when the animals have blemishes, and therefore they cannot be used for a carbon, right? So what that represents is it represents a person who has wealth, he has animals, and yet can't seem to find a way to use them as a sacrifice, meaning can't seem to use them in the proper way and use them for Hashem's service, so to speak, right? And then the fifth one, interestingly enough, he says, is the struggle of bitochen, the struggle of trusting Hashem and surrendering to Hashem. How does he learn that? Because the fifth section deals with the korban toido, the Thanksgiving korban. That's interesting that when you thank Hashem for the korban, like all korbanos, but particularly korban toido, you thank Hashem, you bring this korban, you thank Hashem for what something that He's given you, but it's got a very limited time that you can eat it. Only that day and that night. It's got to be done quickly. Right? What does that represent? Says the Ishbitzer, it represents this concept that we thank Hashem for things that He's given us, but then we've got to daven again for tomorrow. So we never secure, in other words, right? Yes, we have gifts from Hashem and we thank Hashem, but that's only today. But then for tomorrow we're going to daven again. So there's that insecurity that we have, which should be able to be strengthened and removed through bitachon, but that in itself is a struggle. So those are the five struggles that he talks about. And he says that then follows in to the parsha of the Moyadois, the section of the Yomim Tovim. He says the five Yomim Tovim that the Torah talks about is like antidotes, or the energy that strengthens or gives strength to these five challenges. How so? He says the first one is Pesach. Pesach is about life. Pesach is about the birth of Kal Yisrael. So it's about not worrying about that thing that comes after life, but appreciating life, connecting to the vitality of life, connecting to the vibrancy of life. That's the whole idea of Pesach. Pesach is in the spring when things sprout. Pesach is the birth of Klal Yisrael, the life of Klal Yisrael. So Pesach is the concept of Chaim, concept of life, which is Keneged, it's the antidote to the struggle of life and death. Shavuos, in a very interesting way, says, corresponds to the struggle of health. Why? Based on a Medrash. Because the Medrash says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when the HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to the Yidden at Har Sinai, everyone was healed. Because it says, we learn this from the Pasuk, that says, they all heard, they all saw. It says, anyone who was blind was able to see, anyone who was deaf was able to hear, and so on and so forth. Every physical blemish was actually healed, and the Yidden were given this perfection, so to speak, the perfection of health, so they should be able to receive the Torah properly and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly. So that Shavuos gives us strength and hope and strength to go through the challenge of health. Rosh Hashanah is about spiritual commitment. So Rosh Hashanah is in a reawakening, the Shofar. So Rosh Hashanah corresponds to the spiritual challenge, the challenge of being impure, the challenge of being distant from Hashem. That's Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah brings us back again and reconnects us. Yom Kippur is about the challenge of using our physical things to serve Hashem. Right? Remember, the fourth parasha was about someone has a mum, a blemish in his sacrifice. Always, he has animals, but he's not using them for Hashem's carbon. He's not using them to serve Hashem. He says Yom Kippur is the whole idea where we actually detach for a day from all pleasures of Olam Hazeh, from all indulgences of this world, all material things, so that we should come back into focus and we should realize when we leave Yom Kippur what it's all for, to be able to use them in the right direction. So that's the Yom Kippur facing that challenge. And finally, he said the fifth challenge was the challenge of Bitochen, challenge of surrendering to Hashem and being in Hashem's hands and just completely trusting and being secure with Hashem's brachas that will come even the day after the Thanksgiving. So that's, of course, the festival of Sukkot, because that is Sukkot. Sukkot is Mansim Chaseinu. It's about going out of our physical houses, going into a flimsy hut, being surrounded by the mitzvah of Sukkah, and having simcha from it. In other words, being completely protected by Hashem, although it's not physical protection because it's a temporary hut. But that's the idea of Sukkah, is to realize that everything physical actually has no security anyway. And our only security is that being enveloped and being embraced by Hashem's presence, which is the Sukkah, and that's what gives us security and simcha, and understanding that brings to a measure of simcha, which therefore becomes the yontif of Zman Simcha Seinu. So just an interesting thought about the first five sections of the parasha actually corresponding to the five Yomim Tovim that the parasha goes through. Okay. So the thing I wanted to go into more detail, which we've done before, but I want to do it a little bit differently today, perhaps, is the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. One of the great things about, you know, we often connect the parshas to the times that we're in, but Parshas Emor, we never have difficulty doing that, because Parshas Emor is always in between Pesach and Shavuos, just depending where in Pesach and Shavuos, but it's always somewhere between Pesach and Shavuos. And Parshas Emor is the Parsha which has the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Let's just have a look at the mitzvah inside, and then we'll go through a few things. Okay, so have a look on page 684. Pasuk Tesvah, 15. Verse 50. So the context of this parasha is the following, that on the first day of Pesach is Yontif. It's the festival of Pesach where we commemorate the going out of Egypt. The second day of Pesach we bring what's called a Korban Omer. And I've done this before, but just to make it clear in case we've forgotten, the reason we call this period the Omer, the word Omer means a measurement of flour. That's what Omer is. It's a certain measurement. Because the next day, the second day of Pesach, they had to bring a korban omer, a flour offering of barley. It was barley, which was ground up barley, which was flour, barley flour. And that was the start, that was sort of signaled the start, the whole process, the journey of Sfiras HaOmer. Okay, then the Torah says the following, verse 15. The mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. It says, Usafartem lochem mimochras ha-shabbos, you shall count for yourselves the day after Shabbos. Now, what that means is the day after Pesach. In other words, it doesn't mean Shabbos, it means Pesach. We'll talk about that. Miyoyim aviyachem is omer atnufa, from the day that you bring this wave offering, because this offering was brought out of barley flour and it was waved in the Beis Hamikdash, similar to how we wave a lulav. You count from that day. Sheva Shabbosois tmimois tihyeno, 7 complete weeks. Which also teaches us something very important halachically, that the Sfiras HaOmer must be at night. And that's why even though the Korban HaOmer was brought the next morning, but they started counting the night before in order to make it complete days, complete weeks. You must count ad mimocharas hashabbos hashvis, until the day after the next Shabbos, the seventh Shabbos, in other words, the seventh week. Tisperu chamishim yoim, you should count 50 days. Vihikraftem, and then on the 50th day, in other words, we don't count 50 days, we count 49 days, but then the 50th day, until 50 days, in other words, he craft them, and then you should bring on the day, on the 50th day, you should bring mincha chadasha laHashem, a new korban for Hashem, a new flower offering. What is that referring to? So just to clarify what we said before, we talked about chadash, we talked about that until Pesach, until the second day of Pesach, no one would use new produce, right? New flour for that year. That stopped when they used to bring the korban oimer. So in the Talmud of Beis HaMikdash, once they brought the barley offering on the second day of Pesach, everyone was then permitted to bring, to use new flour of that year. However, in the Beis HaMikdash itself, where there was lots of flour offerings, they would continue to use old flour until Shavuos. Shavuos, they would bring a new flour offering, this time of wheat. It was called Shtei HaLechem, the two breads. Right, because it had two breads, which had to be chametz, actually, interestingly enough. And that was made out of wheat. And when that korban was brought, then they would start using new flour for the sacrifice of the Beis HaMikdash as well. That's how it works. So there's the korban which begins the Sfiras HaOmer process, which is the barley korban at the second day Pesach. And it ends on the 49th day. And on the 50th day, there's a korban, a flour offering, which signals the end of the whole journey, which is the Mincha Chadasha, the new korban, the new wheat korban, in other words, which was brought on the 50th day on Shavuos. Okay. Now, if you have a look at your handout just at the bottom, I've put a couple of things which need to be explored here, right? Number one, why actually the korban oimer was made out of barley? What's the purpose of that? Now, I say that because there were many, many flour korbanos, many flour offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. They were all of wheat. Every single one was wheat, except only two were made out of barley. Barley was considered inferior. I don't know about nowadays, because nowadays we have very interesting eating habits, but in olden days, wheat was considered human food, barley was considered animal food. Okay? I'm not sure what that says about cholin, but anyway. Right? So that's how it was. So the only two korbanos were brought out of barley was oimer and the korban of a soita, the woman who's gone astray and suspected of adultery and so on and so forth. There, the reason is very simple. The Gemara says because ma'aseha ma'ase behema, her actions were emulated that of being animalistic, and therefore the korban that she brought was also an animalistic korban. But Omer, why is Omer that? Okay, so let's leave that. Then the second thing, this whole idea of mimocharas hashabas. This is a huge thing, and we're going to go into it a bit. The Torah says we start counting the Omer the day after Shabbos, which raises two questions. First of all, what's the emphasis on the day after? Why can't I say from the second day of Pesach? What's the day after Shabbos, the day after Yom Tov? In other words, why is the emphasis that it's the day after the first day of Pesach? Why not just the second day of Pesach? And also, why does it call it Shabbos? Now, it's not referring to Shabbos, it's referring to Yom Tov. The Gemara says Shabbos Ikri Moya, that Shabbos can be called the Yom Tov as well. But as we see later, it caused huge problems in Jewish history, this, to the point there are still things to do today that are a result of that whole idea, which we'll talk about. So why did the Torah insist on using the word Shabbos? Second of all, what's the significance of the 7 weeks? And then also, what's this idea of this new carbon that comes at the very end of the 50 days? Okay. So let's go into the whole idea of Sfiras HaOmer and try and sort of unravel it a bit. So one of the ideas we know, and we've talked about many times, right? That Sfiras HaOmer connects Pesach and Shavuos. Meaning we came out of Mitzrayim on Pesach. However, the goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the goal of the Exodus of Egypt, was to receive the Torah on Har Sinai. Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush. People forget that sometimes. He said to Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush that the whole purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim was only an end, a means to an end. Because he said, when you take this nation out, you'll serve God on this mountain, because the burning bush took place on Har Sinai, right? However, we know the problem was that when the Yidden came out of Mitzrayim, they were airlifted, so to speak, out of Mitzrayim, spiritually speaking. It was a very, very strong and quick and very intense spiritual exodus, not just a physical exodus, but the Yidden weren't really ready to receive the Torah. They needed the 7 weeks of Sfiras HaOmer to refine themselves and to work on themselves. And that's why it's seven, because seven is the seven middos of the person, the seven emotional powers within the person to get ready and to prepare for Matan Torah. And after that, it was okay then for Hashem to give the Torah. Once again, the Ishvitzer points out a very interesting thing. He says, you know, in the Siddur, let me grab a Siddur one second. I'll get one from there. I just want to show you something interesting. Just a nice thing, such a beautiful idea, it's a nice thing to be aware of when you're daven. You know, in the Siddur after Shema, there's a thing that it's called V'yatziv, right? We say V'yatziv, V'nochem. Now the bracha of V'yatziv actually starts with the word Emes. You know that, Emes is not part of Shema, we make it part of Shema. Right? Yeah, anyone familiar with that? In the Torah, the pasuk ends with Ani Hashem Elokeichem, and that's it. We say Ani Hashem Elokeichem Emes because there's another pasuk in Tanakh that says Hashem Elokim Emes. So the section actually starts with Emes V'yatziv. Now he says that in the first part, until Ezra Savaseinu, you'll see the word Emes 4 times. Right? In the next part, Ezra Savaseinu until Shemoneh Esrei, you also see the word Emes 4 times. What's the idea? It says the following. He says the Emes 4 times refers to the 4 redemptions. Because we know there's this concept we have in Gemara called the Dalet Golias, the 4 exiles and the 4 redemptions. Now those 4 exiles itself can be divided different ways. One of the ways they're often divided is that the first exile was the Babylonian exile after the first Beis HaMikdash. The second was the Persian exile, which came after the Babylonian exile, still before the second Beis HaMikdash. The third one was Golos Yavon, the Greek exile, which actually took place during the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, which is the whole story of Hanukkah, and the Hanukkah miracle was really the exodus from that exile. And the fourth is Golos Edom, which is the Roman exile, which we're still part of today, until Mashiach comes. Okay. Now, why is Mitzrayim, if you go according to this Cheshbon, why is Mitzrayim not included in the four? Because Mitzrayim, meaning the Golos Mitzrayim, the exile in Egypt, and the Geula of Mitzrayim, is really the capsule that incorporates all of them. In other words, it's the parent of all exiles and the parent of all redemptions, right? So, Golos Mitzrayim, the exile of Mitzrayim, is really the source and the seed and the origin of all Golias, and the Geula of Mitzrayim, right, the redemption from Mitzrayim, is the seed, is the planting, is the birth of all redemptions in a potential way. So the concept of Geula, the concept of redemption, was created when the Yidden went out of Mitzrayim, right? Which, by the way, is the reason that we hold that when Mashiach will come, one of the reasons that we'll still remember the exodus of Egypt. Even though the Geula Asida, the Geula through Mashiach, it says will dwarf Yetzias Mitzrayim in a big way, and always will be completely insignificant compared to what will happen when Mashiach comes. Nevertheless, we recognize that when Mashiach comes, there will be this absolutely fascinating Geula, infinitely greater than the Geula of Mitzrayim. Nevertheless, it's grown out of the Geula of Mitzrayim, and therefore could never happen without the Geula of Mitzrayim, and therefore we still need to remember that. It's like a tree, a huge tree that grows from a small seed. So maybe the small seed is nothing compared to the tree, but it comes from the seed, right? Therefore, he says like this: when the Yidden left Mitzrayim, they experienced Geula, right? But they experienced Geula in a potential state. That's the first 4 times we say Emes in the first section of Emes V'yatziv. We say Emes 4 times. That refers to the 4 potential Geulais, the 4 potential redemptions that were given to us when we left Mitzrayim. And Geula, when we talk about
redemption.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, of course. It was, right. And when we talk about Geula, we're not really talking about Geula, a geographical, physical, we're talking about the concept, spiritual redemption, right? However, he says, the purpose of the journey of Yiddishkeit is then to cultivate those Geulas, right? To slowly, step by step, to reveal and actualize each one, which is the second set of 4 emeses. So 4 emes, 4 emes. Why? M is the concept of Geula, it's M is connecting to the one Hashem, the truth of Hashem, and so on. So the first 4 times M is, that's the Geula in potential, that's given to us when we left Mitzrayim. The second section has again the 4 times M is, that refers to the journey of revealing and actualizing and connecting to, in a real way, each one of the 4 Geulas. Now, in a holistic sense, that's obviously a journey of the whole, we haven't finished the journey. That journey is still happening, that's a journey from when we left Mitzrayim until now, until Mashiach comes, right? But in a micro way, that's the whole concept of Sfiras Omer. That's what he explains. So Sfiras Omer is this idea That really, everything we needed to be given spiritually, everything we needed to be given to become Hashem's nation, everything we needed to be given to become connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was all given to us when we left Mitzrayim. It was all done. But Hashem couldn't give us the Torah yet, because we hadn't connected to what was given to us. We hadn't become ours. It wasn't part of who we are. It was given to us as a gift, but it wasn't felt, it wasn't internalized. And therefore he says, that's the concept of the Sefira Soimer. The Sefira Soimer, he says, in other words, it's unpacking, decoding, it's unpacking the geulas, the gifts that were given to us when we left Mitzrayim. So whatever was given to us when we left Mitzrayim needed to be unpacked, it needed to be internalized before the Yidden could be ready to receive the Torah on Har Sinai. Right? That's why the Ramban, in a way, also says the concept of Usvartem Lochem. No, we learned in the Pasuk, Usvartem Lochem, a very strange expression. It says, you shall count for yourselves. Now, the word Lochem seems very superfluous. Right? The Torah just said, every word in the Torah is measured. All the Torah needed to say was, Usvartem, count. Usvartem, Sheva, Shabbosah, Yistvim, Estiyena. Count 7 weeks. What's the Usvartem Lochem? You should count. So on many levels, this is explained in many places. Ramban begins to talk about this, and he says, Usvartem Lochem, you've got to make it yours. On a halachic level, by the way, the reason why it says Usvartem Lochem is because two reasons. First of all, there are other countings in the Torah. For example, there's a mitzvah to count 49, not today, but there's a mitzvah to count 49 years between each Jubilee year, the Yovel, right? So we have Shmita, so you count 7 years, and the seventh year is Shmita, and you count seven Shmitas, and then the 50th year is the Jubilee year, the year of Yovel, which actually in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, when they had the mitzvah of Yovel, it was a mitzvah to count, that was 49 years, but it wasn't a mitzvah on the individual, it was a mitzvah on the Beis Din. So there was a centralized counting. Every year they would count, and they would count up to 49 years. So comes along here the Torah and says, no, this is not a communal mitzvah, it's not a centralized mitzvah that the Beis Din does for you, it's Usvartem Lachem, you have to do it yourself. Others take it even further halachically and say that Sefiras HaOmer is one of the rare things that you cannot be yoitzer from someone else. Interesting, right? Someone can make kiddush for you and you can be yoitzer because we have the mechanism normally in halacha called Shomea Ka'oine. When you listen to something, it's like you say it yourself. So even though everyone has to make kiddush, but you can listen to kiddush. Everyone has a mitzvah of reading the Megillah, you can listen to the Megillah. Everyone has a mitzvah of, I don't know, whatever it is. Sorry? Havdalah, you can listen to Havdalah. All these things. One thing you cannot listen to is Sefiras HaOmer, according to many poskim. Why? Why not? Why can't we just use the same mechanism? I'll listen to you count the Omer, it'll be like I'm doing it. So no, many people say, because that's what we learn from the says, Usfartem Lochem. You have to count for yourselves. Each person has to count their own individual Sefiras HaOmer. But spiritually speaking, says Ramban, it means like this, you've got to count Lochem until it becomes yours. See, whatever we got when we left Mitzrayim, and we got everything, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us whatever we need, but it wasn't ours. It wasn't internalized. It was a gift, and a gift is not something you earn. It's not something that's part of who you are, right? And therefore, says the Torah, now I've given you everything, I've taken you out of Mitzrayim, but for you to change, and really be ready and refined and elevated to receive the Torah, and Har Sinai, Usufartem Lochem, you have to count, you have to make it yours, the Lochem. It fits in also to a famous pshat in the word Usufartem. The word Usfartem means to count, right? But also comes from the word sapir, to illuminate, like sapir, like sapphire. And the idea is that Usfartem Lochem means you have to Usfartem Lochem means illuminate the you, make yourself bright, right? In other words, take what Hashem has given you and absorb it so that the you, who you are, becomes sapir, becomes illuminated. Yeah. And again, this fits in with a lot of different mafreshim. The Mori v'Shamish talks about it, the Kedushas Levi talks about it. They all talk about this thing that they all describe, and they all go into great detail about the unbelievable gift that is given on the first day of Pesach. Mori v'Shamish says that on the night of Pesach, by the Seder, niftochin moichin Eloi, the greatest levels of wisdom are open to everyone, and just amazing levels of Kedusha. The problem is it's not ours, it's been given to us. Sefiras HaOmer is to make it ours, so that we become different, that we refine ourselves, that it becomes ours, and then we're ready to receive the Torah. Now, just to explain, I mean, we've said this before, but just to put it all together, that explains why it begins with the Korban Omer, with the barley korban. Why? And dafka, because barley is animal food. Because it goes back to the whole idea And we've done this in great detail before, so just very briefly, but it fits into this whole idea that we've been talking about, the purpose of Sfiras Omer, which is that a person has two parts. We have the Nefesh HaLakis, the godly soul, and we have the Nefesh HaBamish, we have the animal part of our personality, right? The animal part of our personality is animalistic. What's the definition of an animal? An animal is by definition an emotional being. An animal doesn't use intellect to make decisions. It doesn't base itself on moral clarity. It bases itself on instinct, on impulse. And that's what we have. We have what we call a nefesh, but we have an animal soul that, left to its own devices, will act on impulse. Well, and everyone has their own different animal. You know, not everyone's animal is the same. The one animal is indulgent, the other one animal is aggressive. Whatever the case is, but they're different animals, right? Now, when we talk about this incredible gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us on the first day of Pesach, and we were pulled out of Mitzrayim, and we were inspired, and we were lifted up, and this crash course in spirituality, even though we were sunk so deep into levels of impurity, that was wonderful, and it took us out of Egypt, and it gave us Geula, but as it's explained in many places, it only really affected our godly part of our personality. In other words, the animal remained the same. The animal didn't change. The animal was the same. Because that's what happens. And that's, by the way, we've talked about this many times before. It happens to all of us in our own lives. Often we get sudden bursts of inspiration which suddenly seem to disappear after 2 days. Right? You go to, you hear someone talk and someone comes from the town, tells an amazing story. Everyone comes inspired. Everyone's becoming tzaddikim overnight and everyone's going to add in shiurim and stop talking Lashon Hara and then who knows what and never get angry and I don't know, chesed, and we have a long list of things we're going to do. And then a week later, we're back to the old story. Why? Because what happens is, this is the spiritual psychology of this, right? What happens is that anytime we experience an amazing, sudden boost coming from the outside, an inspirational injection, it's actually only talking to part of us. It's only talking to Anashama. Anashama, which is already not resistant, Anashama, which is compatible with such a spiritual boost, loves it. So what happens is it lifts the neshama, it boosts the neshama, it allows the neshama to have its way for a day or two. In other words, what happens is that the neshama within us explodes, and the animal takes a back step. But after a couple of days, the animal says, "Hold on a second. What do you mean? Enough back step. I'm back now, right?" So it fights back, unless you change the animal, unless you work with the animalistic parts of who we are, and that's exactly what the whole process of Pesach. First day Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us Geula. But which part of us actually takes that gift? Not the animal part, the Nefesh HaLakis. Hashem says, the next day, time to now bring the Korban Omer. It's now time to bring the Korban of Bali. The Korban which is animal food. Time to focus on your animal. Everyone's animal is blessed with 7 very complex and powerful Midas. Chochma, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, and so on. He have 7 weeks to work on them. Work on them, elevate them, refine them, channel them, so that the gift that you got on the first day of Pesach doesn't go away, but it becomes part of the lochem, part of who you are. You meaning the nefesh habamis, the animal soul. And when you've done that, then you'll be ready to receive the Torah on Shavuos. Okay. Now, so that's the general overview of Sfiras Omer. Let's have a look now at this whole concept of, and after a while we'll tie it back into this, right? Correct. Yes. So we always need divine assistance. The Gemara says that very clearly. The Gemara says that every single day the Yetzirah pounces upon the person. The Ilmolei Hakadosh Baruch Hu Oizrei, were it not for Hashem's assistance, we'd never survive. That's true. However, Hashem's assistance is different times, different ways. In other words, the first day of Pesach, Hashem says, "Don't worry about doing any work. I'll do it all for you," but it's not going to affect the whole of you. During the 7 weeks, I'll give you. We'll come back to the end with Machas HaShabbos, but Hashem says, "I'll give you the assistance, but you've got to work for it." For example, when we daven every single night, you know, every single night in the Omer, if you look in the Siddur, we say, you know, tonight is Netzach Sheba Netzach. Hashem should help us refine that aspect of our personality. If that's all we do, nothing's going to change. Right? All it means, Hashem gives us a special koyach that day to work on Netzach Sheba Netzach, or to work on our ambition, or to work on our chesed, to work on our gvura. All that means that week, this week, for example, we're starting another week of Hoyd, yeah? Humility, whatever. So, all that means is that this week there's a special inspiration, special koyach, there's an opportunity to work on it. But the job is ours. We've got to work on it. Davening counting the oimer is not going to do the trick. It just means Hashem is giving us that koyach, right? So Sfiras Oimer doesn't begin with and end with the little tefillah that we say at night. It's a whole process. Yeah. Okay, so now let's understand, and we'll try back into this whole concept at the end. What's this Machras HaShabbos issue? Machras HaShabbos. Hashem says you count the Oimer from the day after Shabbos. Now before we go into some ideas behind this, let's just go through the history of this. Because what this caused in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, this one little tiny pasuk caused untold problems, right? Terrible problems. Just to clarify for those not perfectly familiar, in the second Beis HaMikdash there was this huge problem of the Sadducees, the Tzedukim. The Tzedukim who were, I guess, the reform of the day. I don't know, they were the people who didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. They actually did believe in Torah Shabbat Chsav, they believed in the written Torah, but they didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, which undermined the whole Torah, of course, because you can't have the written Torah without the oral Torah, without the Koyach of the Chachamim and the Sanhedrin, and so on and so forth. Now, they weren't just a little fringe group, they were very, very powerful, and the problem was that they collaborated together with the Romans, because at that time, particularly towards the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Jews were under Roman rule, and the Tzedukim were collaborated with the Romans. And that's why sometimes the Kohanim Gedolim, the high priests, in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was a bit of a corrupt system because of the Roman interference. Sometimes the high priests were in fact Tzedukim, they were Sadducees themselves. Why? Because they used to buy themselves into office using Roman influence, and there was a whole balagan. What remained strong, however, was the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin remained strong. They were the source of Torah Shabbat Peh, they were the source of Emunah, and they controlled halachic legislation, but not without a fight. Right? So there was this huge thing, many, many things, many issues that the Romans tried, the Tzedukim, the Sadducees tried to influence differently, tried to enforce their practice upon Klal Yisrael, and the Sanhedrin had to really, really fight. One of the major, major issues is when we start counting the Omer. Right? The Gemara in Menachos records pages of this debate and what came about because of this debate. So they maintained Torah Shabbat Chsav. So they agreed that there's a mitzvah of Sfiras Omer. They said it's always got to start on a Sunday. Right? So take this year, for example. Pesach was a Monday night. We started counting the Omer Tuesday night. Right? As a result of that, Shavuos is going to be Wednesday and Thursday. They would have had the whole thing shifted over. They would have said, no, Pesach's Monday night, 15th of Nisan, granted. However, don't start counting the Omer until Motzei Shabbos. Right? Which will make Shavuos Sunday and Monday. Right? Yeah, it's always the same night. It'll make a Sunday and Monday. Now, it's just a funny part of that debate is that at one part the Chachamim, the rabbis, challenged the Tzedukim to say, well, why do you think Shavuot always has to be on a Sunday? So I always say this is the first source of a long weekend. So they found one old Sadducee over there, and he came with this brilliant idea. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu oyev Yisrael haver. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Jew lover. He loved Jews. So if he wanted to make it easy, he didn't want to put Shavuot in the middle of the week. You always wanted to have Shavuos only one day, right? You wanted to have Shavuos on a Sunday, so we should have Shabbos and Sunday off. A long weekend. We should have a proper Yontif, Shabbos and Sunday. Okay. So, there was a tremendous war. I'll just quote you some of the concepts, right? We know from Torah Shabbat Peh that Mochas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos, does not mean day after Shabbos, means the day after the first day of Pesach. But nevertheless, the Chachamim had to sort of bring up proofs, and they had to debate them, and they had to bring up some logical arguments. Some of the arguments was, it says, Mimochras HaShabbos, right? The day after Shabbos. It doesn't say the day after Shabbos, which is after Pesach. So the Chachamim challenged back the Tzedukim and said, listen, if it's like you, then you've got a problem. How do you know which Shabbos it is? The Tzedukim said, if Pesach's on a Monday, just start Sfiras Omer and Motzei Shabbos. How do you know which Motzei Shabbos? If your argument is, always that to undermine them from their own argument. If you say that the day after Shabbos means a Sunday, it doesn't say which Shabbos. There are 52 Shabboses in the year. So how do you know which Sunday to start for? Therefore, you must say that it's a continuation of what it says before, and therefore, Mochras HaShabbos means the day after Pesach. Right? The other proof that Chachamim said was like this. It's going back to the idea that it says lochem, for you. Usafartem lochem, you've got to count it. What does that mean? So the word lochem, we find this in other places. We find lochem by the whole concept of establishing a yontif. What is the difference between yontif and Shabbos? So we know one of the fundamental differences between yontif and Shabbos is Shabbos is, with many differences, but the fundamental difference between Shabbos and yontif is like this, that Shabbos is given to us by Hashem. We don't establish when Shabbos is. Shabbos is a seventh day from the creation of the world and never stops. Yontif has to be established by us, meaning Hashem gives us the mitzvah of yontif, but we've got to determine when yontif is, right? So, especially in times of old, in the Beis HaMikdash, they would make the calendar every on a month-by-month basis, and it was up to the Beis Din to declare which day was Rosh Chodesh. It was up to the Beis Din to determine whether the previous month had 29 days or 30 days. So therefore, when Pesach happened, was all up to Hashem, all up to the Beis Din. In fact, there's a fascinating medrash about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It says that the Malachim come to Hashem and say, when are we going to judge the world, right? Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is a day of judgment. So Hashem says, I don't know, let's go check it out. Let's look in the calendar. Let's go and see when the Beis Din have made Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, right? And I'll fit in with them. That's the whole idea of Yom, that's the power of the midst of making the calendar. So we find that expression by making the calendar also, Chodesh Hazeh Lochem, it's your calendar, you have to make it, it's up to you, I'll fit in with you, says Hashem, I'll send the Kedusha of the Yontif according to how you make the calendar. Said the Chachamim to the Sadducees, the same thing, right after this says, by Sfira Soimer, it says, Sufartem Lochem, you have to count, which means you have to determine when the counting will be. That can only be if the counting of the Omer is dependent on Yontif, not on Shabbos. In other words, just like all Yomim Tovim are dependent on the calendar, dependent on how the Sanhedrin makes the Yomtiv, Sfiras Omer is also dependent, because whenever we make Pesach, the next day will be Sfiras Omer. If it would be like the Sadducees say, that it's always a Sunday, it's got nothing to do with Lochem, it's nothing to do with the Beis Din. It's got to do with Sunday. The day after Shabbos is Hashem's issue. So it's not, we're not creating that cycle. So therefore, that's one of the proofs that Sfartam Lochem actually refers not to Sunday, but refers to after Yomtiv. As a result, by the way, because of this fierce debate, and today it's academic, but then it was a real problem, because the Sadducees were trying to force their pshat into the whole Klal Yisrael, which would be in a catastrophe. So because of that, they had this unbelievable ceremony, says the Gemara, where they used to go out the second night of Pesach to harvest the barley. That was part of the thing, right? They used to go the second night of Pesach to harvest the barley for the Omer Korban the next morning. If you look at the Mishnah, there was this whole, it was done with tremendous pomp and ceremony. They used to go, all these together, it wasn't just the guy who went out and cut some barley. They used to go out to the field, and there was this huge gathering, and they used to call out, like there was a whole way of doing it, it was like a ritual almost, that they would say, call out to the guy, is it dark yet? And he would say, yes. And each question, they would repeat three times. And he would say, should I cut? And they would say, yes. Should I cut? Yes. Should I cut? And then he would say, with this instrument? They would say, yeah. A whole back and forth the whole time. And then they would cut it with big fanfare. Why? To establish the Torah Shabbat Peh. It was all done to strengthen that we're not doing it the second day. We're not doing it on Matzah Shabbos always. We're doing it the second night of Pesach, like the Torah says. So it was done with tremendous tumult in order to establish that strength that we have prevailed, and it's the concept of... Now we have even things that we do today which are remnants of that. For example, it's brought down in Mefarshim, a very interesting thing, that we count the Omer, so we have 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, right? So the first day we say Hayom Yom Echad L'Omer. Today is the first day of the Omer. But we don't say Hayom Yom Rishon L'Omer, right? First is really Rishon. Now the spiritual explanation of that is because we don't say first day because we're not counting the days, we're actually grabbing the days. So Hayom Yom Echad means, Hayom Yom Echad today is 1 day, which means when you finish the day, we still have it. So the idea is when you finish the 49 days of the Omer, we've worked for 49 days, and it's not that we have each day as it comes. At the end of the Omer, we actually have all 49 days. That's one reason that it's not Echad. But one of the reasons that we say Echad and not Rishon, because Yom Rishon sounds like Sunday. We want to emphasize that it's not about Yom Rishon. It's not about Sunday. It's about the first day of the Omer. And that's why we say Yom Echad. All right? One of the Hasidic Rebbe's, the Bnei Yisachar, says an interesting thing. He says, there's a minag we call the Shabbos before Pesach, Shabbos HaGadol. Right? Why? So he says, one of the reasons is to emphasize that when the Torah says the day after Shabbos, it's not referring to Shabbos, referring to Yontif. That's why we make a big deal about the Shabbos before Pesach. That's Shabbos, Shabbos HaGadol. And then comes Pesach, and then comes the Omer. In other words, because otherwise we make a bigger deal about the Shabbos that is Erev the Omer. Says, no, Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbos before Pesach, has nothing to do with the Omer. Then comes Pesach, and then comes counting the Omer. Good. So the question is, why did the Torah do this to us? Right? All the Torah needed to do was say, Mimochras HaPesach. Day after Pesach. Same letters, not many more letters. Not making any shortcuts by saying Shabbos. Right? So why does it refer, in other words, if it's really referring to the first day of Pesach, so why does it call the first day of Pesach Shabbos? It's interesting, I just saw a nice little pshat, that the first day of Pesach has similarities to Shabbos that no other Yontif has. Right? Why? Because, you know, on Yontif, you're allowed to carry. Shabbos, you're not allowed to carry, right? One of the 39 malachas, unless it's an Erev, but it's essentially, there's a malacha, there's a thing about not carrying the public domain. On the first day of Pesach, we also find an Isser of carrying. How? Not today. We find in the time of the Beis HaMikdash that when they brought the Korban Pesach, there was a prohibition about carrying any part of the Korban Pesach out of the house. The animal, the meat of the Korban Pesach had to remain indoors all night. It was an Isra, there was a prohibition to carry it out, right? So that's like a bit of a similarity to Shabbos and other things as well. So we have similarities between the first day of Pesach and Shabbos, therefore we call it Shabbos. But okay, that's fine. But on a deeper level, where it works is like this. Because we need to understand, if Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and then gave us Mitzvah Sfiras Omer, so why Taka does it have to be the second day? Why can't we start counting the Omer right away? Right, so the Sefer Achinuch says, because you have to divide between those two things. He says you can't do that. The first day of Pesach, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, right? Second day of Pesach, Hashem starts the process of you working on it. So it's two different ideas. The first day of Pesach is the gift. Second day of Pesach is when we start internalizing the gift. They are two separate concepts, and therefore can be mixed up. We have to start the second day, which is why the Torah emphasizes Mimocharas, the next day. In other words, it's not connected with the first day. The first day is the emphasis on the gift that Hashem gives you. The second day, the emphasis is on what you start doing on yourself. Which also explains why it's called Shabbos. Because, as we said before, although first day of Pesach is a Yontif, not a Shabbos, but the truth is that the very difference between Shabbos and Yontif is that Shabbos is a gift and Yontif is something we make. And therefore, because the Sfiras HaOmer is really about the gift that Hashem gives us and then what we do with the gift, that's why Hashem, when he says that we start counting Omer the second day of Pesach, actually refers to the first day of Pesach as a gift. Therefore, calls it Shabbos. Because although the first day of Pesach is actually a Yontif, but nevertheless, it's got an aspect of Shabbos to it, which is the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim was a Shabbos type aspect. It was a gift from Hashem. It wasn't something we earned, it was just something given to us. And then Hashem says, Mimocharas HaShabbos, the next day. Let's take that a step deeper. It's brought down that Mimochras HaShabbos means something different. We say the day after. What does that mean? It means higher than. Right? What is Shabbos? The word Shabbos. What does it represent? So the word Shabbos represents the perfection of nature. We know that the natural cycle of the world goes in a cycle of seven. Right? So Shabbos represents the perfection of nature, which is all good. But Hashem says, I want you to count the Omer Mimochras HaShabbos. And this is an amazing concept. The idea of the Omer is to rise above nature. In other words, like this. Hashem gave us a nature, gave us a teva. Nature naturally doesn't change. Things that have a nature remain with that nature. You can make it better, you can train an animal, you can perfect nature, you can elevate nature. But changing nature, you need a very strong level of divine assistance to do that. We need to connect to Hashem, who is above nature, for us to go above our own nature. So therefore Hashem says like this. First day of Pesach, I give you a gift. Your neshama is compatible with a gift. But you didn't change because you have a nature. The nature is to be animalistic. And therefore that's it. However, Safartim Lachem, but now I want you to start counting Mimocharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos. Go above your nature. Nature's been perfected. Now I need you to go above your nature. I need you to reveal something which is extraordinary. I need you to reveal something which is amazing because it's going against your own teva, which is the koyach that a yid has, to go above our own nature, to change ourselves, to elevate ourselves, which is the process of going through these 7 weeks of taking each one of our midas, each one of our character traits of the Nefesh HaBamis, and changing it completely, going above our own nature. And just to end off, eventually we come, as I said, to this, the 50th day. Once we've gone through that, we come to the Mincha Chadosha, the new carbon which we bring on Shavuos. Says the Kli Yoker, what's this new carbon? So he says, if you look at another thing, also a strange thing. What happens after 50 days, after 49 days? We have Shavuos. What's Shavuos? The Torah. If you look in the Chumash, there's anything about the Torah. Nothing. The only thing we learn about Shavuos and the Torah is that we bring a new mincha, a new offering, chadasha, right? It says the Kli Yoker, the two things go together. The mincha chadasha, the new mincha that he's talking about, is referring to the Torah. Why is it called the mincha chadasha? Because Hashem wants us, as Rashi brings in the Shema, where it says, "V'hoyu hadavarim ha'ela asher anochi matzavcha hayoyim," that these things that I command you today, says Rashi, what does it mean command you today? Hashem didn't command us today, he commanded us 3,300 years ago at Har Sinai. Says Rashi, the challenge of a Yid, the mission of a Yid is that every single day the Torah should be like Hayom, it should be something new. It should be that as if today Matan Torah is happening. That it shouldn't be like something stale, something old that we got many, many years ago, but every day it has to be a renewed commitment, a renewed enthusiasm, a renewed excitement about learning the Torah, absorbing the Torah, and keeping the Torah. It's like a new thing. It should be a new excitement every single day. That's why the Torah says, Mincha Chadosha, a new Mincha. Says the Kli Yoker, and it's for that reason the Torah does not talk about the giving of the Torah on Shavuos, even though that's when it happened. The Torah doesn't talk about why, because the Torah does not want, after this whole process of elevation and Sefiras HaOmer, we're coming today, we reach a level, the Torah does not want to make this something about a particular day of the year, because it's not. It's about every single part of our journey of a year. That's what it is. It's about every day. That whole model of Sefiras HaOmer and Pesach and thing, we have to see ourselves going out of Mitzrayim every single day. We mention Mitzrayim every single day. Matan Torah is every single day. As we say in the morning brachas, when we say a brach on Torah, we say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Noisein HaTorah. Have you realized that? Noisein HaTorah Hashem gives us in the present tense. We don't say Baruch Atah Hashem, Nosan HaTorah. Right, he gave us the Torah. It says, no senator, he's the giver of the Torah. Hashem gives us Torah every single day. See, in order to emphasize that it's got to be a new thing every day, in order to emphasize that it's got nothing to do with any particular time of the year, or particularly one date of the year, the Torah just tells us after 50 days, bring a new mincha. It doesn't even talk about the fact the Torah was given on that day, because it doesn't want to be limited to one day. In fact, I once told you a pshat, I'm sure I mentioned a few times, that it's a funny thing that in the Gemara, we actually even have a machlekas, we have a dispute about what date the Torah was given on, right? And it's brought down in Mefarshim, it's a really strange thing, the most important event in Jewish history, and that's the one event that we don't know what happened. We know when Pesach happened, we know when Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, Purim, Chanukah. The one thing that is the essence of what a Yid is about, Matan Torah, I'm not even sure if it happened the 6th of Sivan or the 7th of Sivan. I think it's like some Soy maybe says, or one of the Mefarshim say, that's exactly the same idea. Hashem doesn't want to limit it to a date, it's every day. And that's why we don't even know when it happened. I mean, obviously we celebrate it once a year on Shavuos, but it's a thing which happens every single day, and that's the climax of the whole process of Sefiras HaOmer. Good. Yep.